me, guys. I'm going to be cheating off this computer down here. Sorry. But the title of this presentation is Bugs, and what I mean by bugs are all the funky things you do to make the weird beers. Lactobacillus, Pediococcus, and Britannomyces. So I'm going to start from the ones I know the least about to the ones I know the most about. And during the talk, if you want to throw out some questions, go ahead. Just keep it casual. That's okay with you guys. I guess I should finish off what we started. I studied microbiology at the University of Idaho.
Use the microphone.
Oh, sorry. Got my bachelor's at the University of Idaho, and last semester of school, I lucked out and got a job brewing at a small pub in town and lied about my experience and basically learned on the job. Brewed there for a couple of years and then moved out to Oregon and brewed at L.A. Glacier Public House for a couple of years, a small pub up by Mount Hood, and then went down to Full Sail Brewing for a few years and then up to Weiss Laboratories up the hill. So this is Full Sail. I brewed every day for about 3.5 years, Full Sail Amber. And so, you know, I learned a lot about brewing. It was a great experience. Probably learned more about brewing during those 3 years than I'll ever learn from now on. But didn't learn much about making weird beers since I made Amber all the time. You know, we made 220 barrel batches of Amber 4 or 5 days a week. So, so I got tired of making Amber, but luckily learned a lot about brewing at the same time. So after I left Full Sail, I wanted to brew something different. So when I got to White Yeast, I was given the keys to the little 3-barrel brew house up at the lab, and the first beer I wanted to do was a Furlaner Weiss. And didn't really know what I was doing, but I read the Eric Warner book on German wheat beers and picked up some ideas from that and just kind of went with that. So that kind of sparked my interest in the funky beers a few years ago. So, you know, the reasons we use these different bugs in the beer is for flavor, obviously, is a big one. The aroma that it gives the beers, and then also, you know, another big aspect, the pH or acidity of the beer, and also how these bugs alter the gravity of a beer. And so, as I said before, we'll do PDO, lacto, and Britannomyces. And this is a really bad slide, but Pediococcus, I'll just skip this slide. the species that we deal with is Pediococcus damnosus, and that's probably the most common PDO found in brewery contaminations, and probably the most common one that people are using in beers. And it's a gram-positive bacteria. It's cocci, so it's a small, round bacteria. It produces lactic acid. The strain that we use doesn't produce any carbon dioxide during fermentation. If it does, it produces a very tiny amount. And then it also produces diacyl during fermentation, which for most situations shouldn't be a problem if you have yeast in the beer, too, because it'll clean up that diacyl. But where it becomes a problem is in bottling lines. If people are bottling their beer and they have a PDO infection, it'll get into that beer and over time produce lactic acid and then some diacyl in the beer. It's a really tough one to grow by itself. Like a lot of these bugs, it likes to grow in an environment with other bacteria and other yeast. So to actually grow it in a lab by itself is pretty tough. It takes pretty complex media to grow it in. Really slow to grow. It's a little more tolerant to alcohol and hops than lactobacillus is. It's about as far as I'm going to go with this bug because I don't use it too often. I've never had a lot of success using this bug to sour beers. Typically, what I hear from breweries that use it is that it will work over a long period of time, over a few years. So it takes a long time for this bacteria to do anything in beer. So the next one's Lactobacillus. This is a little bit better slide, but these are gram-positive rods, and they're usually, they can vary to short, kind of fat rods to really long, skinny rod-shaped bacteria. The strain that we produce is Lactobacillus buccaneri, and it's really close to Brevis, and that's the Brevis species covers most of the brewery contaminants or strains that people are using in beer to sour. This strain produces lactic acid and carbon dioxide. So if you grow it by itself, you will see CO2 production not as extreme as when you're using yeast to ferment any type of wort. And this is a lot easier to grow. It'll grow in a basic malt extract media. Typically when we grow it, I'll grow it in about a 5 Plato malt extract media. And it likes to grow warmer in about 80 to 90. And they usually take off in about 2 or 3 days, and then it goes crazy. But it won't drop the gravity too much of that media. It'll usually drop it by maybe 0.2 Plato. But during that time, it'll sour that wort from 5.2 pH down to about 3.5 to 3.3. It doesn't like hops. It won't grow very well in anything over 10 IBUs. So if you want a sour beer with Lactobacillus, at least this strain and a lot of other strains, you won't want to use it in a wort with hops. I'm messing around with one. A brewery sent in a sample that had a Lactobacillus in it that grows really well in hopped wort. So I'm messing around with that one a little bit. Hopefully it'll do what we like it to do, and maybe we can have another strain to offer that'll do better in hopped beers, hopped wort. And it's also inhibited by alcohol, so if you're using it in a fermented beer, then it's not really going to do anything.
Yeah. So when you go through a fermentation and it only drops off a couple points, what is the limiting factor tend to be? Is it the alcohol or is it actually the pH?
It's the pH.
Okay.
Once the pH drops about 3.3, it stops growing, or it slows down a lot. So, yeah, in this situation, it would be pH inhibiting it. So how we use it, it works best when added to wort. And obviously, as I said before, it won't do much in beer due to the alcohol inhibition. And you pitch it around 15 million cells per mil, so similar to yeast pitch rate for the fastest souring, which can happen in 3 to 7 days if you use it at that rate. And that's something I'm working on in the lab right now is kind of dialing in that pitch rate. You know, how little can you use to get souring within about 7 days? So hopefully I'll have more info on that next time. So you get the best final. One thing I'm also doing is using the yeast or the bacteria by itself before adding the yeast. And if you do that, it's looking like you get a lot better acidity because it gives the lactobacillus a chance to grow and produce the acid before the Saccharomyces takes off and eats up all the sugars.
So how long before you fix yeast with beer?
I've been looking at doing it 7 days prior to pitching the Saccharomyces. And the nice thing about the Lactobacillus producing all the acidity is that'll inhibit other stuff from growing in your wort. So I think that's looks like that's going to be the best way to get a really sour beer quickly, as opposed to co-inoculation with Saccharomyces. But that's also kind of what I'm messing around with now is the Brenning test to see what the final acidity is on something where you add the Saccharomyces and Lactobacillus at the same time versus Lactobacillus and then Saccharomyces, and then also just looking at what Lactobacillus by itself does.
Would you have to do it at a higher pitch rate at that point to ferment the beer?
To with the Saccharomyces?
Yeah.
That's what I did in the first trial. I pitched pretty high, probably about 20 million cells per mil, because I was worried about the pH and the vision, but I just ran a trial where I pitched 3 million cells per mil, and it did just fine, but that's on a 8-plato, like a Berliner Weiss-type board. So it might be a different story if it's a higher gravity board. But, I would say to be on the safe side, you might want to pitch higher, because that low pH is definitely going to inhibit the yeast a little bit, but not as much as I was planning on.
Any of the comments on general sensitivities of yeast towards the pH? Are there particularly acid-favoring experience?
I haven't checked to see which ones are more tolerant to lower pH, but when we propagate over yeast, we monitor pH throughout the whole propagation, and there's some strains that will drop the pH lower than others. 1056 is probably the highest, it ends at the highest pH. So there are better strains for possibly using with the lactobacillus because they'll create more acidity during fermentation. But it's a matter of if they produce the right flavors that you want. So I think that'd be another interesting aspect to it, which yeast is going to work best to use with the lactobacillus for the most sour beer. But, hopefully over the next few months I'll have some more detailed information on specific amounts of lactobacillus to use and how low pH you can get and how you do it. Next one's Britannomyces, and this is the one we probably mess around with the most in the lab. It's what people call wild yeast now that we bank it and grow it by itself. It's not so wild anymore. If you can see the picture, it comes in all shapes and sizes. Some cells will look like a normal Saccharomyces cell, nice and round and same size, and then some will be really elongated, and some will be oval shaped. So, if you find cells that look like this under a scope, then you're probably looking at Britannomyces. The main species that most brewers are dealing with, Lambicus, Bruxellensis, and Pulsanum. And the Lambicus actually is, what it looks like now is it's a subspecies of Bruxellensis, but there's a lot of different subspecies of these strains, so just because it might be one species doesn't mean it won't do something completely different, and they don't necessarily have them all typed out exactly. What's that? Oh, sorry.
Is that loud enough?
Crank it up.
Crank it up.
Oh.
Got 11 on it.
Thank
you.
More cowbell.
It was four, right?
Speaking of that, turn my phone off.
I was trying to get close to you, but I'm not.
All right, so the big difference between Britannomyces and the lactic acid bacteria is they're... It's tolerant to hops, it's tolerant to alcohol, and tolerant to low pH. So, as opposed to the lactobacillus, you can have this stuff at any time. I've used the Lambicus in an imperial stout that was about 12%, and over 6 months it developed some Britannomyces character. So, it's really, some of the strains are really tolerant to alcohol. And as most people know, these yeasts are used to contribute flavor and aroma to the beer. They also lower the pH of the beer and the final gravity of the beer. And some of the, there's a lot of different flavors that they produce, but the big ones people talk about are horseseed, pie cherry. One we pick up a lot when using it in the early stages is bready. Juicy fruits, another big one. Spicy, meaty, Band-Aid, all those good things. So some of those groupings are the volatile phenols. Those are the Band-Aid, plastic, horsey, barnyard flavors. And then you have acetic acid. The Britannomyces will produce acetic acid in the presence of O2. During aging in barrels or any container that's exposed to oxygen. So if you want to promote that acetic acid character, then you probably want to age in a barrel or something that'll allow some oxygen to come in, but not too much. You know, a lot of O2 will give you a pretty harsh beer quick, if you have retanomyces in it. The isovaleric acid, which is the rancid, cheesy flavors that you get sometimes, it's from a leucine conversion. Then the tetrahydropyridines, so the mousy flavors at high levels, and the bready flavors at low levels. And then the lactate, the fruity, coconut, juicy fruit type of flavors and aromas. And more on that. Oh, go ahead.
The different flavors, you mentioned the one had high oxygen, mm-hmm. would probably produce that kind of flavor. Was there other things that would relate to the other flavors that you were mentioning there?
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of different things that will affect those. Temperature is a huge one. But oxygen actually ends up being plays a big role in aging. But then the pH will affect that. So yeah, there's a lot of different things that will affect that. One of the big ones is choosing the yeast that you use in your primary fermentation with the volatile phenols, the horsey aromas. Those are from conversion of the vinyl phenols. So you get those during fermentation, and those are the clovey aromas that you get from some Belgian strains. So if you're using, you know, a Belgian strain that's typically really clovey, and then throwing Brettanomyces in, then most likely you're going to get a higher level of the horsey barnyard character from that conversion, as opposed to a pretty clean strain like 1056 or a German ale strain. You know, you might not get that flavor development, or it'll take a lot longer. And the Brettanomyces does this, not sure why, but it could be a survival method. And also, it's not dependent on growth. So the yeast doesn't have to be growing for these flavors to be produced. The yeast will convert these compounds into the ethyl phenols without having to grow. And just another slide showing that progress. You know, the first step of the phenolic acids to the vinyl phenols is pretty common. Lactobacillus will do it. Brettanomyces will do this. So will Saccharomyces. But the from the vinyl phenol to the ethyl phenol is pretty unique. The Brettanomyces will do this, and then some other strains of yeast that most people aren't using for beer. Another big reason I typically use Brettanomyces is for the lower pH and then the increased attenuation. Both of these things help, in my opinion, preserve the beer. So the reason you can have these beers age so long is the drop in pH prevents a lot of the oxidation that might occur in a, you know, normal beer that ends at a higher pH. And this is mostly due to the fact that Brettanomyces, most strains of Brettanomyces, can use different sugars that Saccharomyces can't use. You know, they can use everything that Saccharomyces uses, all the simple sugars, but then they'll work more on the maltotriose and larger chains of glucose. And the Brettanomyces Classini will also use lactose, whereas the other two strains don't use lactose. And then also we'll use alcohol. You can use alcohol as a carbon source, which is, I think where that conversion of the ethanol to acetic acid occurs in the presence of oxygen.
If you have a beer with lactose in it, will you still get any of that creamy sweetness from it after you use the Brettanomyces? That takes it all out?
Yeah, I haven't done any research on that. That was just actually a question that had come in. Somebody had asked if Brettanomyces uses lactose, and so I kind of scoured the information and found somebody said that Classini will use lactose and the test of all the Brettanomyces. Somebody was testing about 100 strains of Brettanomyces, and about 10% of those will use lactose. But I haven't heard a lot about people using it specifically because it uses lactose or not using it because it really uses lactose. Just a quick note on sanitation. You know, people usually freak out about Brettanomyces in the brewery. You can kill it just as easily as any Saccharomyces strain. It's susceptible to high temps, around 160 Fahrenheit, and the caustic cleaner wipes it out pretty quick, and then any sanitizer will do the same. But obviously there are concerns because the Brettanomyces can grow from a small, you know, small amount over time. It might not, if you have it in your fermenter stuck in some scratch, you might not notice it in the first few brews, but you might be able to pick it up after a while. And it's just a concern because of the strong flavors it produces. So the different ways you use Brettanomyces, you can use it in the primary 100% Brett fermentation. You can add it into the secondary, which is what a lot of people are doing, or you can add it with the Saccharomyces. And then you can also use it as a bottling strain. You know, a big example of that is Orval. And then some people are using Brettanomyces without trying to use it. Spontaneous fermentations. Some people accidentally infect their beers with it. Sometimes that's good. Sometimes they like it, sometimes they don't. But we'll talk about some tests we did at the lab.
So post or after you've gotten Brett going, are there any ways to inhibit it?
Inhibit?
Yeah.
Brettanomyces?
Once it's maybe like, okay, I've achieved my desired level of Brett that I want in this beer.
Yeah. I would say refrigerate it.
Just
you know, package it and get it in the refrigerator. It'll still keep chugging along at 36 degrees over a few years if you age your beer that long in a bottle. We did an Orval clone at the lab, and once it hit the level where we needed to throw it in the fridge, we did. And even over 4 or 5 years' time, it still slowly ate the sugar. So, but yeah, the best way to do it is just get it cold, and it'll slow it down enough to keep the bottles from blowing up. So a couple of years ago, we ran some tests at the lab to look at how flavor profiles were different using different techniques of pitching the co-inoculation or primary with Saccharomyces and then secondary with Brett or Brett only. And so these are just some small parts from that test. We also were looking at the attenuation levels a little bit. So we'd take a one wort, and then we would do the different pitching methods. And when we took that wort, we'd do a quick force ferment on it to see about where we should end with the fermentation. And that wort would go down about 2.6 to 2.8 Plato, depending on the strains that we were using for the force ferment. The control, which was the Saccharomyces by itself, we pitched at 6 million cells per mil. And then also the Saccharomyces with Brettanomyces co-inoculated were both done at around 7 days of fermentation, and that was mostly due to the Saccharomyces. The Brett-only fermentations at 3 million cells per mil or 6 million reached comparable gravities at about 65 days, so it took a lot longer for those strains to ferment the wort. The 5.5.2.6, the Lambicus at 6 million cells per mil did it a little quicker than the other methods. And just to compare, the bread only at 7 days of fermentation had only dropped the wort about 2.5 Plato. So if you are doing bread only beers, expect a really, really slow start. You know, when we grow that yeast in the lab, it takes forever to grow. It's really slow. Once it gets going, then it grows quickly, but it's slow.
What temperatures are you?
These are at about 72 Fahrenheit that we ran the test. So these, the fermentations with the lambicus would ferment down to about 2.7 to 2.0, but they stabilize at about 2.0, unlike the forced ferments we did, which were a little bit higher. And the pH stabilized around 4 to 4.2. The fermentations with the Bruxellensis stopped at around 2.7, which was similar to the Saccharomyces strain. And those also ended at about 4 to 4.2 pH. The Saccharomyces only control, when it hit a pH of about 4.2, then after prolonged aging, it would start going up. But with the Brettanomyces and the fermentation, that would help maintain the pH at a lower level. The flavor results, the Brett-only fermentations had a horsey or typical Brett character from about 15 to 25 days, and the higher pitch rates would produce flavor quicker. So, you know, the higher you pitch the Brettanomyces, it looks like your flavor development will be a lot quicker. This flavor development was comparable between different strains of Brettanomyces. The phenolic, smoky, bready aromas were present throughout the fermentations during the first 90 days, and that's how long we ran these fermentations. The acidic tar character, which was from the acetic acid production, developed at about 50 days. So it took quite a while for that flavor to come around. The co-inoculated, which was the Saccharomyces and Brettanomyces pitched at the same time, showed that bread flavor development at 50 to 60 days. So it took quite a while longer for it to happen. And most likely the reason for that is the Saccharomyces ate everything up quickly before the Brettanomyces had a chance to start growing. So it was already delayed. And then that tart character, you wouldn't see that come around until about 90 days. So that was also delayed by co-inoculating. And then the primary Saccharomyces, and then adding Brett after the primary was over, the flavor development came at about 40 days after adding the Brett. So it was also, you know, delayed from just using Brettanomyces in the primary by itself. We ran a second trial using a different strain of yeast, and I think the most interesting thing we took from this was using the Brettanomyces lambicus. That yeast strain by itself, we used at 12 million cells per mil, ended at 0.2 Plato. And unlike the co-inoculations or the 3787 by itself, that ended anywhere between 2 and 2.6, that the high pitch rate lambicus ended really low gravity. So the main thing we took from that is that our Bruxellensis isn't, I guess, so aggressive at lowering the pH or the gravity of a beer after long-term storage, but when using the lambicus, that strain can munch on more sugars and really drop the final gravity of the beer. That's about it. You guys have any questions?
The 0.2 Plato, that's extremely dry. I mean, can you drink it like that? Would you want to? Or is that the kind of the red character that is typically found in those beers?
Well, I think that when we tasted it, it wasn't obvious that it was really dry. But when we took the gravity, it was, you know, surprisingly low. And I think that the big thing with using the Brettanomyces is it can be deceiving what it does to the beer as far as the flavor that it produces. It might kind of alter the perception of what that final gravity is.
Where does Roselaire?
What's that? Roselaire? That's a blend of a lot of these different bugs. It's the Pinio, the Lacto, two bread strains, a Saccharomyces, and a and then a sherry yeast. I don't even know what that is, but
so that's something you just beer by itself.
Yeah, that's something to pitch in the primary. It won't be so useful pitching it into a secondary fermentation. You'll use the Brettanomyces that's in there, and that sherry strain might grow a little bit, but the lacto won't do anything. The PDO, maybe over a long period of time, and the Saccharomyces obviously won't do too much.
So you recommend just using the Grosslehrer by itself?
Yeah, that's kind of how it's designed, is to allow the lactobacillus or the lactic acid bacteria to at least do a little bit before the yeast starts taking off.
And I want to say thank you for making that a year round.
Oh, yeah.
It's really awesome.
Good.
So, give all this information either on a website or some kind of a PDF so that, you know, like when I get home and sober up, I can remember what you said.
Yeah. I'll give you my card or come
sober up,
track me down. Yeah, I can send you this presentation. I'll probably send you a little bit better one that has more info on the Brettanomyces also. But yeah, this isn't on the website right now.
Any comments on how to, well, for each of the major bugs, any comments on how to make a good starter based on if we get a culture, we need to step it up for a larger project?
Yeah.
What would you recommend for each of the different ones?
Yeah, so for the PDO, that's kind of a tough one. I think you can grow it all right in a malt extract base media around 5 Plato. Just expect it to take a long time, or it just doesn't really grow too well by itself. But the lactobacillus is the same. You can grow it in some DME media at 5 Plato, and it'll take about, you know, depending on how big you step it up, 2 to 10 days to grow. And if you measure it by gravity, it's not going to drop the gravity too much. For the Brettanomyces, the same as you do any other yeast, you can do it in a 10, 40 wort. Just expect it to take off slow, whereas the Saccharomyces might take a few hours to start up. Expect it to take 2 days before it really starts doing anything.
So with the blends that you guys sell, do you recommend them not making a starter and just pitching the appropriate number of snacks or appropriate number of packs?
Yeah, for the blends, that's what we recommend, just because if you do a starter, it's going to throw off the balance. You're going to basically maintain the lactic acid bacteria levels, but you'll promote the Saccharomyces. So the Saccharomyces will grow, but nothing else will. And so when you have that, then the Saccharomyces is going to even take over more than it would normally. So basically the lacto buzz won't do anything.
So on your different blends, what would you recommend for oxygenation? Like specifically on the blends, like blended blends and stuff?
I would just do a minimal amount. I don't think it's going to hurt to go on the low side, because you're not really trying, at that time, you're not trying to promote the yeast growth. The yeast is going to do something no matter what. And typically in a normal fermentation, your oxygen's gone within hours. The oxygen will inhibit the lactic acid bacteria a little bit. So I would, if I was, whenever I do beers where I'm adding a blend, I don't even oxygenate the wort. It'll pick up enough when you're moving it around to containers to supplement the Saccharomyces strain. But by the time the Saccharomyces uses it, it's not available for any of the Brettanomyces.
How did you go about figuring out how to blend these things to become successful?
It's kind of, there's been an evolution with that. You know, years and years ago, probably over 8 years ago, the way we would propagate that blend was just by having a continuous propagation of all those bugs. So they kind of reached an equilibrium, and that's what we grew. And yeah. But what we found is, you know, doing that way, obviously, we don't have any lactic acid bacteria in it. And so I started separating those bugs out, culturing them all independently, and then we blend them together at what ratio we think is the best. And we've been doing that for about 7 years now, so that blend's probably not ever going to change. We might release something else that's blended differently if we find that it might work out well.
Have you added Clausini into the mix, like in the lab before, to see how it competes with everybody else?
Not really. No, we haven't. We haven't had that specific bug around too long, so we've just released it in a couple quarterly deals. So yeah, we haven't messed around with it too much. You know, I like that one a lot. It produces some really nice flavors, you know, the tropical fruit flavors, and then over time it seems to produce a lot more of the pie cherry character. So I think it's a pretty good strain, but we just haven't used it too much yet.
Is the Clausini, is that an English origin?
Yeah, it is. It's from a stout beer infection. I don't know which one it was. I can't remember.
When you're given these numbers, what kind of pinch rates are you talking about?
Typically with the Brettanomyces, we're talking about 6 million cells per mil, roughly, because that's what we use in the lab, because that's what we sell in the package. If it goes into 5 gallons, then that's the pitch rate you're getting. So we kind of try to keep it comparable to what we're having people to use.
So what's the difference between popping the pack, basically starting a starter within the package, and then making a starter? Why is that? You say you don't really want to do a starter. Aren't you just making more cells?
Yeah, the amount of cells that are produced when you pop the package is pretty minimal. It's mostly just proofing that package, just make sure it's active. So when you have the Roselier blend or the Lambic blend and you pop the package, it's really not necessary. If we could put it in a different package without any of that media, we probably would, but that's just how we've been selling it. So
there's not a lot of value.
No, I mean, you can just open it up and dump it in. Right. I mean, you can pop it, mix it up, and throw it in there. That'll just dilute it a little bit more. But yeah, it's not really relevant to that blend.
It's marketing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. Well, that brings up a good question. Thanks for asking that, Ben. Is what is in that nutrients that you're breaking these into?
It's the same media that we grow all of our yeast in, so it's a dry malt extract based media. But it's basically wort, unhopped wort. And we add a lot of other nutrients to our media that we propagate the yeast in. But the majority of what's in that package is from Reese dry malt extract.
So if you open the pack and just took the yeast out of there and created a starter, what's your opinion on that?
Well, that's with the Lambic type bugs, or just any
of your products.
Well, that's fine to do. I mean, do you mean popping the package or not, and then making
right?
The
not pop, not oh, yeah. not breaking it, just yeah. opening it up, taking the yeast out, yeah. creating a starter from that.
Yeah,
because you can get more volume of yeast that way.
Yeah, I would. I mean, I would say the only benefit, if you're making a starter, the benefit of popping that pouch would be to dilute the whole liquid, so when you pour that stuff out, what you leave behind is less yeast, you know, it's more dilute, so you're getting more yeast out of the package that way. But realistically, if you're making a starter, you don't need to pop the package.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Just if beer gets really viscous, What causes that? Is that pediococcus?
Yeah, that's typically known to be pediococcus. I think there's probably some other bacteria that can cause that. But typically they attribute it to pediococcus growth.
Do you know what it is that the pediococcus creates
yeah,
that does that?
It's producing some extracellular material. I can't remember off the top of my head what it's called. Yeah, exactly. Just a complex sugar protein molecule, and it's secreting. I think it's secreting it to the outside of the cell
yeah.
while it's growing.
So
So does that ropiness just precipitate then? Or does that,
I don't think so. And I don't know if it goes away over time either. I mean, I've read that if you let it age for a year, you know, years, that it might go away. Like it might be degraded by some other microorganism that's in that. So it might use it for some food. But I think it'll take a long time.
So for promoting growth of these, what, I mean, for, if you're going to do some long-term aging, what temperatures do you recommend?
If you're aging in wood, then, you know, I would say 70 or below. I think the higher temperatures you have, the more potential there would be for oxidation of beer. So, you know, the Brettanomyces will grow at low temperatures. So, you know, if you're aging around 55 to 60, it's still going to grow, but it's just a matter of how quickly you want flavor development. If you want it within a few months, then you'll want to age around 70 or a little bit more. But if you have time, it might be advantageous to cool it down a little bit.
You said you propagate the lactobacillus in 5-Plato wort, but you also said that oxygen inhibits the growth of lactobacillus. So you're not oxygenating that?
No.
Just put an airlock on it and call
it
good?
I just, I propagate it in a sealed plastic carboy. Okay. And every once in a while, every day or two, I'll give it a shake to knock the CO2 out of solution and to get the lactobacillus back up in suspension. Mm-hmm. But yeah, just an airlock. Okay. It's fine. It doesn't produce a lot of CO2. It's probably not even going to be too noticeable. But when you go to shake it, it'll knock the CO2 out of it. But it doesn't do what Saccharomyces will do.
Does the CO2 inhibit the growth of the lactobacillus a little bit?
I think so, yeah. If you don't ever shake it, it grows really slow.
Is that true with Brett too?
Yeah, definitely. When we grow it, when we grow Saccharomyces, it's constantly aerated at high levels. When we grow the Brettanomyces, we kind of have to cut back the oxygen because it'll actually be damaging to the cells because they're not growing fast enough to use the oxygen. So, and that's common with other yeast too. If you can get enough oxygen into a propagation using pure oxygen constantly, that'll actually damage the yeast more than help it grow.
A couple of times I used the Rosalette and I bought two sheets. And like a year later, almost immediately it causes my yeast set to rise up.
Yeah.
Is that a common
beer? Yeah, I think it depends on when you bottle that beer. You know, a lot of people bottle those type of beers expecting the same rules as when you're using Saccharomyces, that the Saccharomyces went to where it did and have more sugar and it'll go back down to where it was, but with all those other yeast, wild yeast in there, it'll actually ferment more than you're expecting it to. And so I think that when you open that bottle, the yeast in the bottom of the bottle are pretty dividing the nucleation sites, and you're, you know, releasing all that CO2 quickly. And especially if you have your bottles aging on their sides and you have yeast sitting on the side of the bottle, that'll produce more foaming than if you're aging
there's
up.
There's really no way to get around
that. Yeah. You know, the big thing would be just to monitor it every so often, and when it hits that point, refrigerate it so it's not going farther and farther.
Or
cut back on your bottling sugar.
Would gelatin, I mean, it help pack it down a little more? Any other adverse effects?
Say that again.
Just using gelatin to kind of pack it down a little more?
I
don't know if the bugs
might be. That might be. It might be.
They eat the gelatin and then.
It might be just a matter of when you're bottling, carrying over less yeast into the bottle. I don't know, but it's probably dependent on a few different things.
If you did it in like a champagne bottle that had a big punt in the bottom, so that you get sediment and a ring around it, that might help. Maybe.
Thanks. Yeah, a lot of times we'll bottle the beers too early, or as far as we'll think that the beers are done, but
yeast is just cold.
Yeah, it could just be the amount of yeast. If you can carry over less yeast, if you can find the beer prior to bottling and racking. Maybe rack it a couple more times. Yeah.
Yeah, I have been having less problems.
Yeah.
Any recommendations on something that if you've been aging a Flanders for 2 years, you think most of your yeast is dead, what would you re-bottle with?
I would use a champagne strain. And that's what we found messing around with these beers. It's more... we haven't done a ton of testing, but we had a beer that was in a barrel for a couple of years and bottled it. My favorite was always 1084 or the Irish Ale strain, because I thought it was pretty hearty. But then we also used the pasture champagne, and the 1084 didn't do anything after a couple of weeks, and the pasture champagne had some pretty good carbonation. So.
Do you think it was the pH or the alcohol that inhibited the 1084?
The pH. The 1084 is pretty alcohol tolerant, but the pH is an issue for a lot of these. So that 1084 might carbonate the beer, but it might take a few months for it to do it. But the champagne yeast seems to be pretty tolerant of those environments.
I also wanted to say thanks for making 37 Yeah. Everybody's trying to guess for that.
I can't remember. I'll have to...
that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that one's an interesting strain. It'll attenuate farther than any other strain we have. Any more?
What was that Mark was talking about? It was
3711.
Oh, that one, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a pretty unique strain. If we ever blend that with something else, I think we did a high gravity blend of yeast, and so that was one of the components, and we had issues with all the packages swelling out at the stores because that 3711 would eat the sugars that the other strains didn't use. Have to think about that one later.
So, actually, given that one of the first beers that you brewed after moving over was a Berliner Weiss, any tips on working with Berliner Weisses?
Yeah, you know, that's... keep in touch with me, but I think what I've found so far is that probably the best way to do it is to inoculate with lactobacillus and let it go till it stops, which is probably in about a week. It's going to finish what it's doing. And at that point, it's going to be at a pH of around 3.2. And then you can add your Saccharomyces strain and let that eat up all the sugars. The pH isn't going to change, but the acid level's going to change. That's what I'm kind of checking out right now, because I was kind of frustrated I couldn't get it below a certain pH. But then after tasting the different beers at the same pH, but... fermented differently, there was a big difference in the acidity.
What Saccharomyces strain do you recommend for fermented beers?
I recommend the 1007. I think it's German ale. That one just, it's pretty clean, and it also tolerates low pH levels. And then also when you're, you know, one thing I learned over the years is that real Berliner Weiss has Brettanomyces in it. And that's a long-term storage thing, and so you don't want any yeast strain that produces those intermediates that are going to end up tasting horsey. We just did a big trial with a, I thought a 2565 would be a good strain, and all those beers are horsey. And so that brought me back to using 1007, because that's what I've used before, and they're never horsey. So yeah, I think the way to do a Berliner Weiss would be to do the lactobacillus for about 7 days, then inoculate with 1007. That'll take a couple of days to ferment out. And at that point, get as much yeast and out of that beer as you can, and add some Brettanomyces and bottle it, and then let it age for a few months if you want the bread character, but if you don't, you don't need to age it too long.
What's in the Berliners blend that you guys have?
It's the Lactobacillus 1007 and 5526. And that's probably what it's going to be again. I think we're releasing that in the next one of the PC programs this year, but I might change the Brettanomyces.
Are you going to be releasing Clausenia soon?
Yeah, that's starting in April. So in a few days, it's going to be on the PC lineup.
Yeah, what is the next batch coming out?
Next one is the Clausenia, and then the Canadian Belgian yeast, and the, I think we call it the Belgian Pale Ale.
Just, you know, a lot of of the, and excuse me guys, I'm fairly new to the whole home brewing thing, 2 or 3 years on this, but, you know, traditionally homebrew stores and the industry tells you primary, secondary, and you know, some homebrew gurus out there, you know, we talked about Jamil and those guys, that they've kind of converted recently to not doing a primary, secondary. Just going straight primary until you reach your gravity and then packaging.
Yep.
I'm wondering if you could give any opinion on that, Bob, on the differences between the two and what you feel is most appropriate.
Yeah, I would say if you're brewing a beer that's an ale or any beer that you want that fresh flavor from, that the, you know, the less amount of time you can have between brewing it and getting it into a bottle or a keg, the better. There's just the balance, you know, how much do you have a way to get rid of all the yeast that's in the finished beer? If you don't and you want bright beer, then you need to, you know, you need to filter it or you need to fine it or just let the yeast settle out. If you don't care that there's yeast in suspension, then the sooner you can drink that beer, the better, if it's a pale ale. Or
do you think there's any penalty to be paid for having your beer sitting on that bed of yeast? You know, we get conflicting information on that.
Oh, yeah, and I think there's different schools of thought. I mean, I don't freak out about the beer sitting on the yeast for an extra few days, where some people do. But I also, if I'm brewing a pale ale that's hoppy and I want to maintain that flavor, I don't want it sitting around. I mean, it's not just sitting on the yeast that might contribute some off flavors, but it's just the loss of those aromatics that volatilize out to the air.
Do you think that transfer from primary to secondary, what do you think that effect has on your homebrew?
Well, I would say that any transferring you're doing, any movement's gonna, you know, volatilize. I mean, the volatile aromas are gonna come out quicker because you're causing the CO2 to come out of solution when you're racking, and that CO2 is scrubbing out a lot of those flavors. I'd say as little as you can handle the beer, the better, you know, for just about any beer. I would rather ferment a beer, and I always bottle it right out of the primary. I bottle with the Cooper's drops, so I'll just throw those in the bottle and bottle it right out of the primary when it's settled enough.
Thank you.
But if it's a lager and you want to haven't spent some time, or if it's a higher alcohol beer, then I would rack it into a secondary and move it to a cool place where you can do your longer term aging on it. But if you're doing anything much past primary, there's no reason to keep it at a warm temperature in a secondary container. You might as well, after primary's done and you have some type of diacetyl rest, there's no reason to keep it warm anymore. The colder you can get it, the better, if you have to age it. But if you don't, get it into a keg or a bottle and drink it as quick as you can.
Outstanding. Thank you. Would a conical, using a conical for racking, cause that same volatile?
If you're racking into a conical or when you're racking,
you're just
from,
blowing off the shrub off the bottom of the conical.
Oh, I don't think that's a problem. I don't think that's going to... I think that's an easy way to remove the yeast without causing any disturbance in the beer. So yeah, if you have that, the luxury of that, then I would remove the yeast. There's no reason to. I don't think so, but I mean, that's a pretty finicky yeast, right? So depending on how old the package is or how big the start, how big of a start you made, it will affect how that yeast behaves. But, you know, any of the strains that are on the high flocculation side are pretty temperamental when it comes to changing the pitch rate or oxygen levels or the wort that it's put in. The moderate to low flocking yeast are easier to work with and more dependable.
For your next batch, you are also
Yeah, that's the common practice for people using cylinder conicals, is that you dump the bottom off to get the troop out, and you know, maybe some dead yeast. I don't think the amount of dead yeast in the very bottom is much different than the top, but typical practice is to remove the very bottom, use the midsection, and then leave behind the very top of the cone. But realistically, when you're pulling from that cone, you're probably pulling from all sections. So it doesn't really matter. Just get the bottom junk off of it.
So I'm friends with a lot of winemakers who are scared crapless of Brett. In terms of transfer of Brett from one place to another, besides obvious physical transfer, are there any airborne risks? Or
I would say that
no problem.
An airborne risk would have to occur in a where there's something fermenting and you're blowing on large amounts of Brettanomyces. You know, if it's airborne, it's probably small amounts of yeast that's floating around in the air, so it's going to take a long time for that to develop. You know, with wine, that could be a problem because it might age for years and develop that flavor, but, you know, I would say that the likelihood of that happening isn't that great. Brettanomyces that might affect wine probably is coming from somewhere else besides the air. It's probably coming from a barrel, or it's coming from something on the fruit that was originally there that wasn't killed at some point. I don't think it's coming from the air too much.
When you're using a mixed strain like Roselaire, like, is there any concern of autolysis of the Saccharomyces over the course of a year that you're letting it sit?
Not in my experience. I don't worry about that too much. You know, some people rack at about 3 to 6 months just to remove it from not just the dead yeast that may be in there, but the other truth that carried over. I think that's probably more relevant than the possible dead Saccharomyces that's on the bottom. But the, you know, maybe large proteins and fatty material that carried over from the brew might not be the best.
Would you do the same thing, like, with 100% Brett beer? Like, start back, give it a couple months, and then transfer it?
I would probably give it longer than a couple months. I would probably give it at least 90 days. If you transfer too early, you might reduce the population of yeast in the beer too much. I mean, I don't think that'll hurt it drastically, but it might change your aging time. It might increase it. But I'm just personally tend to not worry about autolysis in the beer, but I don't make lagers a lot, and I think that those are probably the people that need to worry about it more. You know, the flavors in the lagers, and especially the light lagers, are really clean, so any autolysis or off flavors from that are really obvious, whereas in a lot of other beers, they're masked by whatever else may be.
Another winemaking practice is agitating your leaves, basically stirring. Does that have any? I mean, apart if you can do that in a mildly oxygen-deprived environment, so you're not just oxygenating the juices out of that. Would that make sense for longer-term kind of processes, or is that just probably not necessary?
I'd say the only thing that's doing is rousing the yeast and knocking out the CO2. But I'm not a wine expert either. But that's what I would think that the benefits of that would be. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're doing that to increase your fermentation rate or just finish things out, then rousing and doing that to rouse the yeast and knock out CO2 is beneficial.
You mentioned that you do that with lactobacillus bacillus, right?
Uh-huh.
Do you do that with bread too?
Yeah, the way we propagate it, we're all continuously rousing it with aeration, but just at lower rates than Saccharomyces. So yeah, it's continuously being roused with some air. But we'll typically inoculate some more with the Brettanomyces and just keep it anaerobic or not introduce any more air to the fermentation. until we see CO2 production, and then we'll start adding air to it at a slow rate, and then once we see better growth, then we'll speed it up. But just what we found, if we, from the start air rate, it just doesn't like that too much.
Sanitizing and stuff, so kind of keeping the bugs away from the stuff that doesn't get anybody. What can I do to help myself out there?
I guess the big thing would be, you know, if you're introducing Brettanomyces or any bacteria, that you're using some kind of fermentation vessel that's made of a material that's not easily scratched, just like you would with any other fermentation. But, you know, the fear is just that these bugs will get into these areas and won't be exposed to chemical or temperature when you're cleaning. But as long as you can assure that even if you do have scratches in equipment, that it's exposed to chemical or it's exposed to high temps above 160, you're going to be okay with it. I wouldn't worry about most lactobacillus if you're hopping your beers or hopping your worts, because it's not going to tolerate high levels of BUs. And by the time the Saccharomyces grows, there's enough alcohol to inhibit most lactobacillus or pediococcus. Those bugs I don't worry about too much. And we don't, you know, we get a lot of infected beer samples sent in from breweries, and rarely is it lactobacillus or pediococcus or Brettanomyces. It's usually some other gram-negative bacteria that's producing corny aromas or nasty, just nasty phenolic off flavors. It's almost always a gram-negative bacteria.
What does that mean, gram-negative?
Oh, it's just when you classify a bacteria, it's either gram-negative or gram-positive, and it has to do with the cell wall of the bacteria, or the membrane, how it will take dye in or not. One will stain one color, one will stain another. And that's just kind of the beginning point of classifying what type of bacteria it may be.
You feel the gram-negative the same way as you do?
Yeah. I mean, those bugs typically come from poor boils or poor sanitation or infections in heat exchangers, small little spots in your cold side of your brew house that don't get cleaned very well. That's almost always where it comes from. Once you get the beer, if you get the wort in the fermenter with the yeast without too much contamination, you're probably good.
You got any general yeast questions too? This is also, you know, it doesn't have to be just sour.
Yeah, and this sounds basic, but I mean, I hear all these different formulas for yeast pitching rates. So, what is the yeast pitching rate that you recommend?
For ales, you know, our standard recommendation is 6 million to 12 million cells per mil. The way we formulated our smack packs, if you add one of those to 5 gallons, it'll give you 6 million cells per mil. A general rule of thumb is 1 million cells per mil per degree Plato. So, you know, for most ales or lagers, that would be somewhere around 10 to 12 million cells per mil. But, you know, it depends on what kind of beer it is. There's some yeast strains that need to be pitched at 6 million or a little bit less to get the flavor that you want from them. Typically, the higher pitch rate, the less ester profile you'll get and the less flavor from the yeast you'll get.
Let me ask that. If, you know, because we got smack packs, we got vials, and we're doing all that, and sometimes you're not able to hit that exact number of pitching rates.
Yeah.
Is it better to over-pitch or under-pitch?
I would say in most cases it's probably better to over-pitch a little bit.
Okay.
You know, definitely for lagers it's better to over-pitch. For ales, I don't think it's necessarily best to over-pitch. You know, a lot of the fruity flavors that you're getting from, you know, in ales might come from a lower pitch rate than a higher pitch rate. But it, you know, it depends on what you're doing. But for the most most part, I would say it's probably better to go on air on the high side. In a strain like the 3068 Fine Chef and Wheat, it's not better to overbench. You won't get the banana flavor that it typically produces. If you pitch over about 12 million, you won't get any of that flavor, but if you pitch between 3 and 6, you'll get a lot of it. So,
thank you.
Yeah. When we run most of our trials, it's what 6 million sends per round. But, you know, that's a fresh package of yeast. A lot of people are shopping in shops, and that yeast might be a little bit older, so that 6 million cells per mill isn't the case anymore. It's 5 or 4.
How are you defining fresh? Because, you know, when I go to the home brew store, you know, it's usually a week or two.
Yeah.
It is what you'll purchase, but, you know, I live out in the boonies.
Yeah.
So yeah, I need to buy 8 or 9 packs at a time, and they sit in my fridge for a month or two.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess by fresh, I would say a month past the manufacture date. Some strains handle storage great, and some don't. 3068.
How does one know that as they're, you know, as they're going along?
You don't. I mean, it's kind of hard to tell unless you have a way, unless you have a microscope and some dye.
Yeah.
But, you know, the smack pack, you can at least pop the package and see how long it takes to swell. And if it's taking longer than 12 hours, then...
Yeah, I've heard the standard formula, a day for every month of age.
That's old. That's kind of an old guideline that we had years ago.
Do you have a new guideline?
Yeah, I mean, if it's not swelling up after 12 to 24 hours, then there's probably an issue with that yeast, and you would either need to make a starter with it or get an exchange on the package. You know, well, typically, if somebody has a package that's not looking good, they can take it back to the store and get one, a new one, and we'll, you know, we take care of the retailer as far as getting them yeast for that. So
I had a pack of lead that somebody gave me, it was dated 2008.
Yeah.
It took 2 weeks. Did you use it in a beer?
No,
I
drank it.
You'd probably mostly be pitching Brettanomyces into it. You know, the lactobacillus was probably toast, and Saccharomyces probably wasn't too good. That's why the package didn't swell up. It was the Brettanomyces that was taking a long time to move. But it probably would have worked, but it would have just...
So is there such a thing as a pure yeast strain?
Well, pure is dependent on how much you test it. So we test our yeast, you know, we say there's less than 1 CFU per mil, which means a colony forming unit. So if we put this yeast slurry on a petri dish with some media that inhibits the Saccharomyces from growing, then if there's 1 colony that comes up, then we dump it. So we have to have less than 1 CFU per mil. But, you know, considering 1 mil contains 1.2 billion cells of yeast, you know, compared to 1, you know, 1 cell of whatever that stuff may be, that's our purity standard. You know, pure, you know, by definition would be nothing, but we can't test that there's
It's all a relative term.
Exactly. But most people, I mean, that's pretty common in the brewing industry. Less than 1 CFU per mil. Just people are plating 1 mil of media a lot of times, or beer or yeast. But realistically, you could probably have 2,000 colonies of lactobacillus in that 1 mil, and it's not going to do anything to your beer. But it depends what, you know, it depends what is in there. But as long as there's not anything on that plate, then by our standards, that's what goes out the door. Yeah.
So what do you put on the plates to inhibit the yeast?
Cyclohexamine. It's an antibiotic.
And that doesn't do anything to the box?
What's that?
That won't inhibit bread?
No. That's kind of one way we can help classify bread and help grow on. of cyclohexamine.
So I have a very important question. I see your beer is empty. What are you drinking? Can I get you another beer?
Yeah, I'll take a pale ale or something. Thanks.
That was really the most
pressing question. Yeah, that's right. I kept looking at my glass.
Jess, we want to say thank you.
Oh, thank you.
So our whole group, to get this one solid.
Thanks. I appreciate it. Yeah, the left side. It's
Have you seen that fast cask technology from, I think it's Marston's?
I haven't.
They developed something where the yeast is actually formulates in these little like spherical like pearl shapes, and somehow it ionizes the particulates in the water and actually kind of forces it through the particle faster. So it's supposed to use it for cask conditioning. It's supposed to drop the conditioning time down to like a matter of a couple months.
I haven't seen that. No. So it's yeast, encapsulated yeast.
I couldn't. It wasn't in that much technical detail, I guess.
And it's for conditioning.
They're kind of trying to protect it, I think. But it looks like it's some kind of sped up. It looks like maybe they're using some kind of polymer or something with the yeast to kind of bond it or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I haven't seen that product yet. But yeah, I guess if you can combine some different finding agents.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it was Marston's if you wanted to.
Okay. Yeah.
I was curious if you had a comment on it.
No, I haven't seen that one yet.
Any projects coming up with YEAST right now?
The big one for me right now is the Berliner Weiss. Like how to make that. What else? Greg's probably working on a few different things right now. We have some barrels at the lab that need to go into bottles and kegs, so we'd like to get that program going a little bit more. Trying to bug our owner to get us a brewing license so we can actually brew beer and take it to events legally. Right now, it's since we lost Brian, it's been busier in the lab, so I have less time for brewing projects. But every year we try to do a couple single wort, multiple yeast strain brews, and that'll probably happen this summer. We'll do some of that. My interests are messing with these bugs, so I'm trying to find that. See if that one lactobacillus will work out well. Basically try to figure out how to do some really fast sour beers and see if they taste as good as the ones that take 2 years or 3 years to make.
So how much beer do you guys brew, or how much at a time do you brew?
We brew about 60 to 100 gallons at a time. Our brew house is about 100 gallons. So, if we're brewing beers for barrels, we'll do 100 gallons to fill a couple of barrels.
So is Brett the only one that really latches onto wood in terms of eating it?
Yeah, I think that's fairly unique as far as utilizing the material in wood, the sugars in wood.
Anything special about byproducts from that?
I don't think so. I think it's probably just breaking it down into the simple... Well, finally the glucose, and using it how it would to produce whatever flavors it's going to produce. But I'm guessing that process is pretty slow. So I don't think if it's growing using sugars in the wood, it's not doing a lot of it. There's still more simple sugars in fermented beer.
Let you off.
Thank you. Appreciate you coming down. And you'll be at the festival tomorrow?
Yep. At the festival tomorrow. I was just at the Goodwill Bins, and I picked up a blazer. And I have a couple. shows up at the first session with that blazer, I'll send them up a box of yeast, whatever kind of yeast they want. So if anybody wants to try on the blazer, I haven't washed it yet, so you might want to take it home and wash it. Get the iron on the patches, and then I'll be up the first session. You find me, and then I'll get you some yeast. I should show you a box of yeast, whatever you like.
All right.
And then also there's some. I'll have some patches and keychains if anybody wants to grab that before they go.
Great. Thanks. So you can pick his brain first in just a little while too.
Yeah. I'll be sticking around here.
This is actually kind of a part of a larger scheme that we have. In May, Ron from Cascade Brewing is supposed to be coming up, and we're going to try to get a talk with him. And in the summer, we're going to try to do a sour mashing clinic as well. And in about a year from now, we want to hold a specialized competition for sour beers, nothing but sour. So start thinking sour. Now you've got a good fundamental knowledge after this. Do some more research. Come to the next educational speakers and the clinics, and we'll hopefully be plugged in a few months. Otherwise, feel free to hang out, ask questions. If you want to grab some t-shirts and stuff, I'll be in the back. And otherwise, yeah, thanks for coming.